This is Jermaine Hughes from Oakland, and I am on the Go Science Show with Stephanie Lowe.
Hi, this is Jeffrey O. Wilson, senior editor at PC Magazine, and you are on the Dope Science Show. Stay tuned for some more dope science.
Hey, everyone. This is the Dope Science Show, and I am Tensie J. Taylor. Excited to be a guest.
Hey, this is Richard Wright, your local rap artist from Los Angeles, and I am here on the Dope Science Show talking about science and music and other cool things.
My name is One Cool Blurred, or Dr. Paul McNeil, and I'm on the Dope Science Show, where we talk about changing the narrative and making science dope for people of color.
Okay, this is Dave Beck, and I've been on a Dope Science Show with the dopest girl I ever known in my life, Ben Diego, and her name is, say it again.
Science Stuff with Steph.
Science Stuff with Steph, that's right. She's a great lady, guys. I hope you tune into her show.
My name's Damien Swaby, and I'm here on the Dope Science Show, the best podcast out there today.
Hey there, everybody. This is Maya Anika, visual artist and mental health advocate and speaker of the Spectrum blog, here with Stephanie at the Dope Science Show. And you should be here too. Go Steam!
Yeah! Hey, what's up, fellow people? What's up? My name is Natasha Wallington, and you just heard me on the Dope Science Show. Have a good day, y'all.
Awesome.
Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Stuff with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists. Today's guest is Adisha Banjoko, or Adisa the Bishop. He's known by many names. He is the charismatic founder of the Hip Hop Chess Federation, which is a nonprofit based in Oakland that uses chess and martial arts to teach nonviolence to at-risk and incarcerated youth. The organization has recently expanded to LA as well, which I'm super excited about because I can visit, and I can volunteer, and I can do things with them, which is awesome. The organization is supported by the community as well as leaders from both the martial arts and hip-hop communities. The RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan is an active board member and a super genius, if you didn't know. But I'll let Bishop tell that story to you. The Bishop is also the author of a dope book called Bobby Bruce in the Bronx, The Seekers of Hip-Hop Chess. It just sounds cool, you know? It's a history book about hip-hop, chess, and martial arts in America in the 1970s. It's the real get down. The Bishop takes us on his journey from a teen growing up during the rise of hip-hop to his current role as a leader in the community investing in kids. The book mixes self-help, hip-hop, chess, and martial arts stories, and it's a really easy, practical read. I suggest you check it out or give it to a friend. I'm actually going to do a giveaway as well. Yeah! When I post this, I will give you details. But yes, I will be giving away one of these books, one of his books, to you guys. And in this candid conversation, Adisa shares a few stories from the book, and we talk about the importance of engaging everyone in STEM and technology. I hope you enjoyed the show. Let's get started.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dope Science Show. This is Adisa, a.k.a. The Bishop, and I really appreciate your time because I've been trying to track you down for an interview for a couple of months now.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Definitely, and I'm excited because I read your book. I don't have it in front of me, but I read it, and what caught my eye before I even knew you had a book was your foundation, Hip Hop Chess.
Yes, Hip Hop Chess Federation. Yeah, Hip Hop Chess Federation. We've been around about 10 years, and we fuse music, chess, and martial arts to promote unity, strategy, and nonviolence.
So I'm sure the audience is like, so who are you? Can you give like a little backdrop of who you are what you do?
Yeah. So my name is Adisa Banjoko. A lot of people just call me the Bishop and or Bishop. I run the Hip Hop Chess Federation, founded in 2006. and we basically teach kids life strategies through chess. So our kids are not necessarily consistent or common tournament players. We teach chess and life as a class. And so, you know, our goal is to get kids in college, off the streets, and focused on planning, you know, the beautiful life that they want for themselves.
So why chess? Like, was that the avenue?
Well, chess was an avenue because it's probably the oldest and biggest game played in the world. And it bridges cultural, religious, political, gender borders. And I'm someone who, I dropped out of school, high school, and I kind of started reading on my own, took a few JC classes, but I mean, like, I everything I do is pretty much autodidactic. And so, like, for me, I realized that, you know, I was reading Socrates when I was really young, and he said that I am not Greek nor am I Athenian, but I'm a citizen of the world. And I always was blown away by that idea, that at that time, when so much of the world was just focused on, you know, whatever race or culture you were, because you were isolated by land or whatever, that this guy could see the importance of transcending his land base and his race and his culture. And so chess helps us do that. And also, chess is an art form that celebrates chess. I mean, rap music is an art form that celebrates chess more than any other form of music on the planet. And that's hard for a lot of people to understand. It's harder for them to believe it. And so that's why I had to curate. I teamed up with the World Chess Hall of Fame in St. Louis and taught their curatorial team the history of chess and hip hop. And what the result was Living Like Kings. And it was just such an amazing exhibit. I'm so grateful to Susan Barrett and everyone over there who made that possible. But the crazy thing is, it all happened and launched right during Ferguson. And so we got to work with the kids of that community. I got to see St. Louis just before Ferguson and after Ferguson. And it's just really powerful. And we had a good time working with the kids who were in the juvenile halls, and a lot of the kids in the regular schools. And it was just, you know, it's just really fantastic. And hip hop also, like chess, is an international language now, you know? And so by fusing music, chess, and martial arts, we're able to help people bridge so many different gaps in their brains and come to appreciate all cultures. And so that's always been our goal, of course, with nonviolence at the core.
See, that's so beautiful and unique. That's what got my attention. I was like, what?
Thank you.
And
thank you for buying my book.
Yes, I did. I bought it as soon as I saw it. And then it was such an easy read. Can you tell the audience what the title is of your book and where they can find it?
Yeah. So definitely go to hiphopchess.com or Amazon and check out Bobby, Bruce, and the Bronx, The Secrets of Hip Hop Chess. It's really kind of like an innovative self-help book for people who want to help themselves or their kids use music and martial arts and chess and chess philosophies and martial arts philosophies as tools for self-improvement and some little shortcuts to emotional mastery and things like that. It's pretty fun.
It is pretty fun. I thought there is a lot of really cool stories in there as far as being relatable, giving us some insight of how you came to be in this place in time with your philosophy and your foundation. And it was also very inspiring and very relatable and easy to read. I read a lot of personal development books, you know, and they're beneficial, but not everybody is into all that, you know, fluffy language and a lot of, you know, and all of that very abstract spiritual talk that comes with a lot of personal development.
No, it's true.
you know, and I felt like your book was like, It was real. You seem like a regular guy who was like, you know what, I found this, you know.
Yeah.
And the real tools that, you know, your demographic, young men and up-and-coming, you know, boys and women too. But it just felt like you were speaking from your perspective, and it was very relatable. So I highly recommend you guys check it out if you're into hip-hop, if you're into chess, if you're into, like, all those cultural references and behind-the-scenes stories of who did this and who said that at this event, you know, all that hip-hop, like, history stuff. If you're into that?
Yeah, it's in there. Yeah. No, it's in there. You know, it's funny, though, because I really wanted to make a book that was relatable. You know, I wanted to make a book that felt more like a conversation, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, the things in this book work because they worked for me, and I was able to teach them to other people and work for them. So I know this works.
Yeah, definitely.
I also know that, you know, a lot of the language inside self-help books and a lot of the language, even inside books that are meant to be academic and whatnot, like sometimes that academic language, while effective in those circles, common people don't speak like that. You know what I mean? Like they really don't. And so, you know, when you look at people like Malcolm X, like James Baldwin, Martin Luther King, you know, Gandhi, all these guys spoke very plainly. And that's what mm-hmm. made them so powerful. You know what I mean? And so, like, that's what it is for me. Like, I'm not trying to reinvent a bunch of stuff. Like, I don't reinvent chess at all. I don't reinvent hip-hop. I don't reinvent right. martial arts. I just allow them to be, you know, connected and in an open and natural way, so that even if you're not a martial artist, I don't want anybody to think that they need to start being a martial artist or that's what I'm advocating. I'm just advocating some of these ideas you can pull into other aspects of your life. And the same is for chess and hip-hop.
Definitely. And it makes you want to play chess. I felt like I was missing out. I was like, dang, I really should learn how to play chess so I can be smarter and more strategic and more disciplined.
You're pretty smart, but I mean, you know, chess Thanks. Is awesome. And I think you dig it.
I think so too, and it'll definitely help with me being able to have greater patience and focus, because that's something it's kind of hard because I get distracted easy by ideas and things like that.
Yeah, no, me too. And I think, I think that's a big part of life, and I think that it's always, you know, we're always looking for an extra tool. That's the other thing. This book mm-hmm. is just meant to be an extra tool. You know what I mean? It's not to replace, meant to replace anything you already got going on or whatever. But like for me, specifically for girls, especially African-American and Latina girls, I'm really serious about teaching chess. I teach a class on chess and life at John O'Connell High School as an elective. And I was recently, you know, kids take it for a semester and then they can, like I have a semester of sophomores, I'm about to get a semester of freshmen. So the freshmen, you know, they were coming in and they were like, chess and hip hop and life, I don't know, you know, whatever. And I said, well, you know, real quick, how many people in this room know how to swim? And so all these hands went up. I said, oh, cool. Now, somebody who doesn't know how to swim, raise your hand for me. What's up? Oh, yeah, my name is Bobby. What's up, Bobby? I said, you don't know how to swim. He's like, no, I don't know how to swim. I said, now, what happens when I push you into the pool? He goes, I'm going to drown. I said, and that is exactly what I teach, because in 4 years, we're going to push you out of this high school, and you're going to be in the sea of life. And in the water, either you know how to swim or you don't. Like, it doesn't know, but you die. So what I'm trying to do is make sure that you know how to swim, because all of these teachers and counselors, none of them will be here. It's going to be you. And if you can't swim, you're going to drown. And people are like, all right, I'm about to sign up, but where's the list?
It's the truth. You know, we all have friends and family that we've seen who just can't swim, you know, and they just get swept away, you know, and it's something that's sad to see. And you're And I understand because you had to do it, you know, when at least I can speak for myself. It was just like, oh, I'm in the real world. Oh, shit, this is kind of hard. Oh, I didn't see that coming. You know, it was like, I can't believe I'm making it. Like,
it's true. You know? It's true, you know? It's like you just get thrown in, you know? And so I'm like, you know, if you take my class, you'll have some ideas on how to navigate this space, you know? So,
I'm glad you're doing it.
It's very rewarding, though. No, thank you. I'm very excited. We also have a jiu-jitsu team. And so our jiu-jitsu team had our competitive debut a couple months ago at the U.S. Open. I took this one kid named Forrest. And, like, he came into the space and his dad knew me. And he knew me because I taught him chess. He used to be at the chess camp, but then he kind of disappears. Now he comes back. He's like 13, 14, and he doesn't know what jiu-jitsu is. Dad's like, man, you know, I just want you to kind of get him out of the house, help him, you know what I mean? Like be a little more social, whatever. So, like, I take him under my wing. Like, he didn't even know what jiu-jitsu was. 3 months later, he took second at the U.S. Open. You know what I mean? Like, our team was, like, crushing it, and, yeah, so, you know, our jiu-jitsu team starting to build out, you know, and I have to say the martial arts community probably supports HHCF more than the hip-hop or the chess community, like, combined. It's really weird, you know, but martial artists from all over, they really help the org, and it's a fantastic thing. I'm always humbled by all of our supporters, and I'm always humbled, you know, by opportunities like today to be on a show with you. You know what I mean? Because these aren't even the things when you write books and when you work on this stuff. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? But this is cool. I like this opportunity to share my thoughts and ideas.
Well, I'm so, like, I'm happy too. It's like just trying new things and putting yourself out there for your passions and your beliefs, and it opens opportunities. And one of the, I asked a mutual friend of ours if he had a question that he'd want me to ask on a show, what would it be? And one of them was, and you can choose to answer one or the other, was he said, how did you meet the RZA, and how did you meet Easy E? So I don't know how long these stories are, so you can tell both or pick one.
All right, I'll tell them both. Easy E actually is responsible for my writing career. I would probably not be a journalist if it wasn't for Easy E. Like, everything I've ever written, including this book, is because of the opportunity that he gave me when I was in high school. So what happened was, in high school, I was kind of buck wild. And it was the late 80s, you know what I'm saying? And so I was I'm not a hood kid. I'm a suburban kid. I grew up in the suburbs outside of San Francisco. But hip-hop called me at an early age. I got access to it. And, you know, this is before The Source. This is before MTV cared. This is before Instagram and YouTube. And so if you wanted to be about hip-hop, you had to go to places that could probably get you robbed or shot or jacked or all kind of stuff, you know what I'm saying? For real.
Yeah.
Like, hip-hop in the beginning was a real street, you know. It's hard to imagine now because it's everywhere, selling us cereal and clothes and whatever else, and Christmas. But I mean, like, you know, there was a time when this was the music of cats on the block, and that's it. So I got into it really early, and but I also, you know, I wasn't really doing too good in school. I was a pretty lower mediocre, like, student. And and what happened was I was bombing all my classes, and my counselor, Mr. King, called me into his office, and he was like, I'll give you an example of the relationship I had with Mr. King. One day, he calls me into his office, and he's like, I need to check in with you about college, you know? And I wanted to see what college you wanted to go to. And I was like, okay. And he goes, so sit down and tell me where you think you want to go. And at that time, I was drinking pretty heavily. This was in my junior year.
In high school?
In high school, oh yeah. And so I looked at him and I was like, you know, and I had the most sincere look in my face, and I was like, honestly, sir, I'm trying to go to Hillman. And he...
Oh, Hillman.
Hillman College. Hillman is not a college.
I know.
From the television
My heart. Oh. That's so sweet.
He fell out of his chair laughing at me and like kicking me out. He was like, get out of my office.
That's so sweet.
Get out of my office.
Oh, were you? Weren't you serious?
I was hella serious. He was like, you don't know what the hell's going on. Get out of my office. So he was hella funny. But there was something about him that he always liked me, even when I was blowing it. So he comes in, he calls me to his office, and he says, look, he said, you pretty much have all F's right now, except for this one A in English. And that has inspired me to put you on the journalism team. And I'm like, I don't, now I went to a high school called Oceana, which was known for two things, like wrestling, our wrestlers served everyone. And two, a little bit of football, and three, we were known because we were two blocks from the beach. Like, I went to high school, like a very stereotypical, the way people imagine everyone in California lives, that was Oceana, right? We could have been a TV show. And so I was like, I don't care about wrestling, and I don't care about football, so I'm not interested.
What do I
do? He was like, well, he's like, you got to write about something. What do you like? And I was like, I was a DJ. I was like, I like hip-hop. He was like, oh, write about hip-hop. What you gonna write? I was like, all right. So that very weekend, like that weekend before that day, I think that I'm 90% sure that happened on a Monday. A day or two before, my father took me to the record store, and I got Public Enemy's Rebel Without a Pause. And I had seen that they existed. I had only heard one track, MPE. But I heard that My Uzi Weighs a Ton was really important. So I bought it. And I was going out, and there was a guy in there behind the counter. And again, you had to go to hood stores. So, like, I had my dad take me to this hood store. But my dad's from the hood, so he don't care. But I was, you know, I was like hella shit. So this dude, he's got like a jerry curl. He was light skinned, had a jerry curl down to his shoulder.
I love it.
He was wearing schoolboy glasses, and like, I think he had a t-shirt on and like a leather, like a leather members only jacket. And I don't remember his name, but he was my hookup for all the hip hop. So I was like, yo, and I look like straight Urkel, but everybody loved me because I was so serious about hip hop. So I was like, yo, what's good right now? And he was like, ooh, we just got this in the mail. Check this out. So he pulls it out and he plays it, and it's Boys in the Hood. Like, it was like literally the day it came out. And so Easy was not a star then. So he plays it, and my dad comes over to me. He's like, hey, you cannot get that record. Because he heard, you know what I'm saying? Like, the first verse.
<laughs> <laughs> And
so my dad's like, you cannot get that record. And I was like, of course not. And I look at him and I nod, and I was like, put it in the bag. And so my dad didn't know the name of the record. You know what I mean? He just knew he didn't like what he heard.
Yeah.
So I told dude to put it in the bag. So my dad bought it. I went home. I listened to it and I loved it. So when I got back home, I looked on the center of the record. And in those days, independent labels had their phone numbers on the inside of the record. So I called. And a lady answered, and I was like, hey, yeah, I'm a big-time writer from the Bay Area, and I'm interested in interviewing Eazy-E. Can I talk to him? And she was like, no, he's not in the office. And I was like, okay, well, I'd like to leave my number, and please have him give me a call. And then I just went to go play basketball, because I'm just, like, quite honestly on some bullshit, just trying to see if I can meet Eazy. I don't know. And I come back from playing basketball, and my mom is like, this boy named Eric called for you, and here's his number. I was like, okay. You know what I'm saying? So I'm laughing, and I'm like, all right, hold on. I get straight. Beep, boop, boop. Make the phone call. He's like, hello? And I was like, I'm looking for Eazy-E.
He's like, this is him. And I was like, I put the phone down and I covered it up because I was like, this is his home number. This is insane. I'm like, yes, I would like to interview you for my newspaper. I think Boys in the Hood is a great song. I think you got a hit on your hands. Yes. I'm like, he's like, yeah, I would love to interview. Cool. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to get my thing together and I'll call you back in a day or so, you know, blah, blah, blah. Get off the phone. My mom was a secretary, so she had like phone interview stuff for like dictation or whatever. So like, yeah. I hooked it up and I called him. And, you know, I wasn't a journalist. Do you understand? I had never written anything. I mean, I'd written some poetry in like a piece on Shaka Zulu in junior high that people liked. But I mean, you know, I had not decided to write at all. And I didn't think I could write. And I really didn't want to write. But I did want to meet Easy. So he calls me back. Yeah. We talk. And, you know, we were cool. And so we just start talking like all the time. And like he became my homie. And then I did an article for the Oceana Foghorn and it sucked. But what happened is he didn't know that I wasn't a big journalist. And so one day right. We're on the phone and we're just talking about whatever. And he's like, hey man, can I ask you a question? I was like, sure. He's like, so is this coming? He goes, my manager Jerry wanted me to ask you, is this for the Chronicle or like and I was like, oh my God. I was like, dang, this is horrible. So I sat there, I said, hey, look, man, I got to have an honest moment with you. I'm a kid. I go to Oceana High School, man, and, you know, I was like, I'm a serious fan, man. I really love your music, and I feel bad, but I am doing this article. Are you mad? And, like, he sat there for, like, 3 seconds, and then he just fell out laughing. He was like, oh, my God. He was like, man, I don't care. He was like, no one writes about us at all. This is like our first article, so run it, man. I was like, cool. So,
oh, that's so dope. So
like, I ran it, and he stayed cool with me.
And a man on a day was born, convicted minutes after a true natural disaster framed for manslaughter. The hurricane caught a rising from out the south water like torrential rain, and the ring no opponent escaped unscathed. You can't believe the world we live in's unjust. All I see is more proof there's no place for us. They had my man caught or locked in a cage like an animal, driving to the point where the mind works mechanical and works by remote control. It was done to all of us. They tap directly into our soul. Either it's sing sing or it's bars around your mind. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. In a 6x6, a guilty man cries for repentance and losses with innocence.
Same story, same target, different time. Typical reaction from the prisoners of the blind. Trying to fight time, it's a battle with a mind. Waiting for redemption, surviving in the bind. Same story, same target, different time. Typical reaction from the prisoners of the blind. Trying to fight time, it's a battle with a mind. Waiting for redemption, surviving in the bind.
Keep lying down forever, cause you stand the weather, cause you hold it together. I can't even explain the pain. Yeah, I'm saying, your life was like a hurricane. A hurricane forever. Imagine behind bars forever. Cause you stand the weather, you built for that. You cut for that. Don't tell me that you know the pain.
Like, I remember when his son Derek was born, he called me from the hospital, and I was like, hello? He's like, hey, what's up, man? What are you doing? I was like, chilling. He was like, eh, I'm just at the hospital. I was like, damn, somebody got shot? He was like, nah, I had a son. I was like, Eric Jr., aww, that's awesome. And he was like, no, I already got an Eric. I was like, what'd you name him? He's like, Derek. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, you and your wife must be so happy. And he started chuckling. He's like, I'm not married, man. And I was like, you're not? Because you got to remember, I'm hella square from the suburbs. Everybody gets married now, too. And so I was like, and he could hear me figuring it out. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I was like, that's great, man. I'm happy you got two kids. He goes, I don't have two kids. I said, how many kids you got? He's like, I got six. I was like, with one woman? And he goes, no, man. Like, it was so funny.
You were like, oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Like, every point, it's like, oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, man, I'm trying to keep up, but I don't understand how it works because I'm a nerd. But it was just,
and
it was
you're
the funniest
a kid.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, totally. It was funny. It was funny. He was a funny dude.
That is
dude.
Awesome. That's a great story.
I think when people look at like Pac or Easy or a lot of these dudes who have passed away, like they think that they sat around like kicking like kittens and like shooting guns in the ceiling. And it's like they were actually really funny, silly people. Pac was hella funny. Pac made me laugh. I laughed more with Pac than with any other rapper ever. And it's just always funny, man. Easy was silly as hell too.
That's awesome. And it's just have you seen Atlanta?
Not yet. I'm gonna do that for the break, probably. You know what I'm saying? Because like everybody's saying that's what's up. Yeah.
You have to. I just like binge watched it, and it was so smart and funny. And like one of the lead characters is this rapper named Paperboy, right? And so I'm not gonna spoil it, but he has, you know, his fame based on this tough like rapper like persona, and the show shows you that he's like multifaceted. You know, he's silly,
he's funny, he's all of it.
And that's what reminded me of it, you know, and his interactions with people is they immediately try to superimpose like this public image of him that they have, you know, and he's constantly confronted with it, and that reminded me of that. I'm like, everyone thought Pac was like super hardcore, you know. I didn't know much about him growing up until I actually took a class on him in college. Had to take like a class, and I was like, oh wow, because I believe the stereotype and the hype that I had seen as well.
Yeah.
But I had never bought an album, you know. I never really got to know him as an artist until I took the class, and it's just amazing how you don't realize how little you know when you're just seeing what is the public persona, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, totally, man. No, totally. You know, like, so many different rappers that I've had the dumb luck of coming across, like, they're very brilliant, they're very funny, they're incredibly multifaceted, and, you know, Easy was certainly one of those dudes. Like, he was a straight character. I mean, he was really funny, and his charisma was so high. He was part of the reason he got over on so many people was because he was charismatic. He was amazing.
That's a talent, for real.
Yeah.
The other, you wanted to tell us how you met
the
RZA, and how is he connected, the RZA, and how is he connected to Hip Hop Chess?
Oh yeah. So I mean, RZA is. You know, he's on our board, and he's been down with HACF just about from the beginning, from our inception. The way we met was really, you know, my nickname and pen name, the Bishop of Hip Hop, was around a long time ago, like before Wu-Tang Clan. And I loved chess since I was a child. I was 4 years old. Although I'm not really that good, I just love the game and I can pull life stuff off, but I'm not like some kind of devastating player at all. But like, wait, what was I talking about? RZA. There it is.
No worries.
Yeah, so the thing was, when the Wu-Tang came out, I thought that they were cool, but you know, I wasn't initially the fan that everybody else was. Later, you know, but I liked Cream, you know what I'm saying, and you know, the Mystery of Chess Boxing. But because I'm a serious West Sider, I didn't fall in love with Wu-Tang like I did with everybody else. But the difference was that I knew GZA. I knew GZA from when he used to rap under just the name The Genius on Cold Chillin Records, and we met then, like before him and RZA created Wu-Tang. So later,
later, and like that story is crazy in itself, how I met GZA. Like, I almost killed him and Mel Kwan crashing in the rain. And like, I thought Mel Kwan was gonna beat my ass because I was so small and he was so big. And I heard him with the car. It was really stupid. But anyway, that's a different story. That's a different story. So what happened is with RZA is when I put out the book, Lyrical Swords Volume 2, West Side Rebellion, I was on the wake-up show with Sway and Tech, who I've known since I was probably not a teenager, but close. And when I got off, Tech was like, You need to meet RZA, man. Like, you guys have so much in common. You already, and I already knew, you know what I'm saying? Like, his album and all that stuff. But I was like, yeah, man, of course. So then after that, there was a lady, sadly, whose name is blanking right now. I hope she forgives me. But she worked with Dave Chappelle. And somehow, she and I were talking about something. I think one of my friends was trying to sell some art to Nas or something. And I knew that she had some... She knew Nas from something else. But she was like, yo, I just saw RZA's coming to town. You should try to meet him. I think you should go, and I think I can help introduce you. And then so Sway was trying to do the same thing. But like, we weren't able to really get a proper connection. So I took my first book, and I was I had been on for my first book. I was working on the second book. I did Lyrical Swords Volume 1. So I wanted to interview him for 2. So I told my wife, I said, man, let's go. But like everyone had said, like he wasn't doing press, like at all. Like there was no way to interview him. So he was speaking at the Commonwealth Club, which is a very popular place for intellectual debates and talks, right? The Commonwealth Club, San Francisco. So they were interviewing him. And I was kind of blown away by that on its own. Because like you literally have like UN leaders and, you know, top tech heads going there, and they had RZA. So I was really kind of blown away. So I went and I brought a copy of my old book. And there was all this press there that had also thought they were going to try to get hold of RZA. But the lady was, like, as my wife and I walked up, she had just told everybody, like, he wasn't interviewing nobody. And I was like, hey, can you please go get the RZA for an interview? I'm still acting like I don't get it, kind of, you know what I mean? And she's like, yeah, you know, he's not doing interviews. And I said, here, I need you to do me a favor. So I pulled out my book and I wrote a letter to him on the inside, and I said, hey, look, this is my book. I'm a friend of Tech and the other ladies, you know, and they said we should hook up. I'd like to interview you for my next book if possible. So I closed the book. I said, go give this to him. Tell him that I'm here waiting. And if he doesn't want to meet with me, you can just tell me that. She's like, all right. So she walks it back. She comes back. She's like, RZA will see you now. And the whole press was like, what? Oh, man, come on. I was like, excuse me, gentlemen. I got to go. So my wife and I go in, and we sit down, and he's like, peace. I'm like, peace. And he's just sitting in a room by himself with, like, you know, all that green room stuff, you know, like sodas and a fruit plate, and, you know, some water. But he's just sitting there by himself, just completely chilling. So I'm like, I'm like, what's up, man? You know, how are you? Friend of Sway's, you know, friend of Tech's, you know, we're talking. So he says, you know, I got this book on chess and the martial arts and hip hop. So he says, well, do you know who Ta Mo is? And I'm like, what? Ta Mo. And I was like, no. And he goes, he looked real disappointed. And he was like, that's the guy that created Kung Fu. Right? So it was like a test. I said, I understand. You call him by his Chinese name. I call him Bodhidharma. Sorry about that. Yeah. So I just kind of like jumped into all this stuff about Kung Fu history and whatnot. And he hella respected me. You know what I mean? He was like, all right. You know what I mean? So then, like, we just started, like, chopping and whatnot. And then that led to him being at one of our first big events, you know. And we've been cool ever since then. He's probably been, of all the rappers who've ever helped us out, he's probably been one of the most consistent, you know, supporters with his time and talking to the kids, all the stuff. We did amazing stuff in Ferguson and the juvenile halls out there in St. Louis. But because of a lot of the riots and whatnot, almost none of the work that we did out there got any coverage, and it was a real tragedy. Mm. But yeah, RZA is amazing.
That is
great.
Because that should have been. There's so many good things that go on that just don't get the coverage, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. No, that was real stuff. I mean, we're working with our incarcerated kids, and you know, I have a podcast called Bishop Chronicles, and you can hear some of the stuff that he was saying to the incarcerated kids on my podcast. But I mean, like, dude, he's an incredibly selfless dude. He shares a lot. He's incredibly smart. He can, you know, act. He can produce. He can direct. He can, you know, make beats. He can rap. He plays different musical instruments. He's an incredible dude, man.
He is. I didn't realize. It's weird how the world works. I was not a big Wu-Tang fan growing up, just because I didn't buy music, so I just heard what was on the radio.
Yeah.
Growing up. And so I just didn't know how deep it was until I discovered Kung Fu from my boyfriend at the time. And we went to, I saw my first Kung Fu movie, the whole thing, at LACMA, which is the LA Art Museum. And the RZA was there. He was creating it and speaking.
Whoa.
And it was the 36 Chambers of Shaolin. And
wow.
That was like my first time ever watching a Kung Fu movie and my first time ever listening to it as a talk. And I was like, what?
That is crazy.
I was like blown away.
That's
awful. I was like, what? This is amazing, you know? And everyone who was there just felt so special. It's like maybe 100 of us in this small theater.
Bet.
Maybe
that's,
less.
That's dope, man. Yeah, no,
you know?
Amazing. He's amazing. And you know, the legacy.
And
of
he was so down to earth. You know, he just
he
let
is.
Everyone come and talk to him.
Yeah,
you know, no extra
guy,
security, really.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of LA, Hip Hop Chess Federation is going to be working with the Boyle Heights Arts Conservatory. Shout out Carmen Rita over there.
Awesome.
We're going to have a chapter of HHCF in Boyle Heights. And it's because
that's
Carmen
amazing.
Rita, who also, outside of being an awesome person, is and you know, kind of founder of the Boyle Heights Arts Conservatory. She also was on the Wake Up Show, and you know, she's producer of the Wake Up Show for many, many, many years. And you know, she's an amazing person. I'm excited about bringing HHCF to LA.
Well, I'm excited about that too. That was one of my questions. Your plans for expansion. That's really great. So are you going to be traveling back and forth, like, to get it set up? Or?
Yeah. Well, basically, we already did, like, some early classes and stuff. We actually had Monk from the L.A. rap group, Wu-Tang Affiliates of Black Knights, out of Watts. He taught some of our first classes over there. So now we're going to start rolling it out formally after the top of the new year. So I'm excited. And, you know, I'm sure the RZA and my man Rocco from Dilated Peoples and, you know, some of my other extended family, Zulu Gremlin and, you know, whatnot, you know, we're going to come through. We're going to do some beautiful things in the City of Angels for sure.
That is beautiful. Well, I don't want to keep you forever. I could talk forever, for real, but... You
know. No,
but
this has been a fun interview.
I had a lot of fun, and I had a couple of questions.
Yeah, keep going. I'm just, chilling.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, I don't mind if it's a two-parter. I had a question.
It's all good.
We read, you mentioned that I should listen to your podcast about Bitcoin, and I listened to most of it, but I didn't get to the part about the Bitcoin with my data. Like my Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
But I did want to ask you, what do you think about Bitcoin? It used to be like a buzz that people talk about all the time, and now I like never hear anything about it. Is it just mainstream? It's not.
I think, you know, it's tough because, you know, like, I hate the media. Mainstream media sucks so much. It's so hard to get the truth about anything anymore. But, you know, I feel like Bitcoin is not going anywhere. If anything, Bitcoin will be like the Napster of money. You know what I mean? I think that's how we're going to kind of look at it in the future. that whether or not Bitcoin does or does not continue to exist, it will have created the foundation for us to really start thinking about digital money and how it moves and who's going to control it and who should control it. I think Bitcoin isn't going anywhere, man. I think Bitcoin is going to be awesome. You know, I think it's going to, you know, like any evolving thing, it's going to take some hits, and it'll probably go through a few evolutions, and those evolutions for some of us, I'm sure, myself included, may be painful at times. But I think that, you know, digital money is awesome, and I think it's a great thing. I'm a fan of the idea and the actuality.
Yeah, I'm 100% sure on where the value stone in Bitcoin, like how do they have value in the digital
money?
Yeah,
it's weird.
I'm not exactly sure how it works, but the point is people believe in it, so that gives it value. You know,
that's the thing, right? Like, is that digital Bitcoin any more valuable in actuality than like the $5 bill I'm looking at on my dresser? I mean, like, it's heck of crazy. Like, at some point, we decided to give the green paper value, and now we've given this digital thing value. And I think that as technology increases, what we value we're gonna see lots of shifts. You know what I mean? Like, I'm excited about all of it, though. Definitely.
Me too. Because it's digital, and with digital, it's more about, you know, it seems like it's very open. It's, you know, it's not completely censored and curtailed yet. You know, so
yeah.
It's like you can create anything as long as you have access to, you know, technology. And I know eventually things will change and become new rules and restrictions on just using it, but at this point in time, it's like you can create, you know, you're like, okay, I want to start a podcast, so what is that?
Yeah, and
okay,
just go.
Well, now that
you know
I've
what I mean?
Got, yeah, exactly. It's like now that I have 100,000 subscribers, I'm worth so much, you know,
yeah.
Because that represents so many, you know,
ads
so much value.
And whatnot.
Just like, exactly, just like Facebook or anyone, they have a platform with users. So
yep, no, it's
true.
It's
like if you can create that, then you have value, and that's really beneficial for if minorities and, you know, understood how to monetize it and use it, you know, because every platform that you use, Vine, Facebook or whatnot, you're valuable for the content that you produce for them.
Yep,
and you're
exactly.
not getting the full value, you know.
No.
But
end
it's
of story.
Like you have to
you know
figure
what I mean?
Out
like,
how yeah. You don't. You're just giving it away for free, but at the same time that's where the eyes are, and it seems to be. I see people doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. I see people doing it as far as creating monetary value from their content and their presence online, but not everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like
no, it takes
the
yeah, it takes a while.
Are, you know,
exactly. No, but you know, I love. All the beautiful digital things going on right now in the world, and I think that even the activism, you know, that you see, whether it's people finding a way to gather to remember someone who was killed, or they start doing some like lightweight Occupy type stuff, it's pretty dope, and it's interesting to observe. And I think that even especially like when we talk about nonviolence, like my belief is that the nonviolence resistance of the future, so much of it will be digital. You know what I mean? That you know, mm-hmm. as we talk about nonviolence, we have to reimagine nonviolence. When I talk about nonviolence, my nonviolence is not the nonviolence of Dr. King, but it's mm-hmm. close. And, you know, I think that the role that technology has and will play in our new era of nonviolence is important. When I say nonviolence, I think a lot of people imagine themselves at a lunch counter getting hit in the head with a milkshake, and it's like, man, like I'm not checking for that, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But like my nonviolence isn't that. My nonviolence is using technology to rally the children when they want to protest, and finding a way to keep them safe, you know what I mean, and able to capture what they're trying to do. I think that, you know, nonviolence right now with technology is being able to see the children and the people in Aleppo tell their story from the ground, in a way not only mainstream media wouldn't try to, but they can't. You just can't get that pure moment of a little girl in a hallway looking you in the face and telling you, this may be the last message you get from me. That's going to change you, man. That's going to change you. And so I believe that so many people who code, who design, who understand how GPS works, who understand how digital money works, these will be the nonviolent freedom fighters of the future. So much of that will happen through technology. And I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that.
Me
and I think that with everything that we look at, every digital tool that we're enjoying can be used to help someone on some level.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk to my kids, I'd be like, man, it's cool to enjoy YouTube, but you can learn Algebra 1 just like you can watch somebody just so you can watch somebody fall down the stairs. You can learn Algebra 1 with that same thing. You know what I'm saying? So,
exactly. Like me and my daughter, we watch math videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like we follow some accounts that have like 2 to 3 minute videos. And they help, you know, because we're like, okay, I was trying to figure out how to explain that, but there you go. It's animated. Yeah. It's in the format that appeals to us, you know?
Yeah. No, I love it, you know? And so I'm excited about all the digital activism that's happening. And I think that we need to keep people who do things like that need to keep going with it, and helping the masses use technology to their advantage, political, social,
definitely,
everything.
I just helped with this. I sign petitions all the time. I'm one of those petition signers. You know, like I feel like I'm making change by signing this petition and donating my money to this cause, and sharing this information, because it's like, you know, there's value in that. There's a reason why people want to go viral. There's a reason why, you know, numbers matter. Recently, I helped my friend, you know, do a promotion. They were doing 580 books where they wanted to raise 580 books for this elementary school in Atlanta, you know, and my friend, he did it with this group. I think it's called Arts and Beats, I think.
Okay.
I'll put it in the show notes. And he reached out to me and said, hey, can you make some videos? And I was like, okay. You know, I already do that.
That's
so
dope.
I was like, okay, I did that. And I ended up donating like 4 books. I helped, you know, spread awareness to it. And I just contributed, you know, what I could. And they more than met, you know, I think they 1,500 books or something like that. And they just, you know, and now it's turning into something greater. You know,
and that's the thing,
social media, you know, and it's not like we have 5,000 fans each. It was like, okay, he's got 500 followers over here, you know, but it's that just amplifying your, you know, whatever message you're trying to do for better or worse.
No, it really, it matters so much, you know, it matters so much. And that's why, like, you know, just the other day we did a fundraiser at the Hip Hop Chess Federation headquarters here in the Bay Area. And it was by the jiu-jitsu community. And there were people from, like, Nick Green, Tanner Rice, Elliot Kelly. These guys are, like, global champions. You know, they've been to places like the Abu Dhabi Combat Club. You know what I'm saying? If you know anything about the ADCC championships, like, if you don't know, look it up. But, like, these guys are great. Mm-hmm. And they came and they shared their time with our kids. And, you know, it was just fantastic. And, you know, if it wasn't for the internet, I wouldn't know who those guys are. They wouldn't know who I am. And, you know, they share their time and their money. And anybody who's ever, you know, most of the people that have donated to Hip Hop Chess Federation have done it digitally. You know what I'm saying? They've done it, you know, through all those different mechanisms that people use to crowdfund and fundraise. And, you know, I just, it's a beautiful thing. And
they've never visited, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fantastic, you know, and it's like, you know, you make a video, someone sees it, and they're like, yo, I'm going to donate. Like, that feels awesome, you know, and you create new friendships and new business relationships, you know. So much of my life has been positively affected by the internet, and I know there's a lot of whackness out there, and there's a lot of things that we'll never fully figure out as far as arguments about how content and whatever should be accessed and used and paid for and distributed. But it's going to be like, dude, like, this is still awesome. We have a lot of beautiful things happening because of the internet, for sure.
Definitely. definitely. What was, I think, did you have any questions for me? I never asked any guests that, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that, I think that I'd like to know what you think about the, like, for instance, like, my daughter is a teenager, and she started teaching herself how to code at like 13 or 12. And so now, you know, like, she codes Python and stuff like that. And I'm looking at her, and, you know, one of my friends who codes Python was like, man, she can make like 80 grand a year, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, wow, yeah, pretty crazy. But, like, how, when people talk about the importance of coding, and I totally believe that it's important, and that's why, you know, I really support her in it. Do you think if everybody starts coding, that coding will lose its power?
Good question. No. I think I see coding like literacy. Like, learning how to read doesn't take away the power of literacy, you know?
Right,
I feel like
right.
it is the new literacy, because as we become more digital and we have Google and we have all these search engines and hashtags and
right.
information at easy access, and as right. more things are automated and we don't have to use our thoughts for much, you can
right.
you eventually, I mean, you do have to read, but it feels almost if you don't. You know, like,
nah,
the value.
I think that's deep. Can, no, I think that's deep. Yeah.
You know? And when you, I think with coding, I think the future, actually, a lot of people will build platforms and things that we use code for now, and they'll be using software. They won't have to use code, because
right.
the goal of coding is always to be more efficient. And, you know, and it's not efficient to have to be so detail oriented. So eventually, you know, as different platforms evolve, people will be building them on platform on top of platform and not have to know, like, very detail-oriented writing. But
yeah.
the people who know how to code are the architects. So
right.
there's still power
in it. You're always
going to
need those. Yeah, you're always going to need those. You know?
Like,
no,
that's still,
sense.
Like, such a highly valued skill, because you need someone who knows how to check for bugs and efficiency.
Yeah,
and
that's
you
real.
Are only on the user face, and then you're not going to be able to.
You're not having
testing.
A hand in that. Yeah. No, that's real.
Yeah.
Oh, I know something I really wanted to tell you, though. This is important.
Yeah.
On February 24th, 25th, and 26th, Hip Hop Chess Federation is going to be hosting a really amazing 3-day event, and it's called Unity in Diversity. And it's about how education, art, and technology are being used to help our kids learn. You know, it's going to be very, very powerful. So that's going to be a 3-day event. That'll be the last weekend in February. And I have no idea if you can make it, but I assure you it's going to be awesome. And I think that you'll have a lot of fun. And I think that your listening base would have a lot of fun. So that's going to be here in the Bay. More details.
Yeah, I definitely will. Yeah, thank you for telling me, so I can, like, prep for it. Yeah, I would definitely want to say I want to go. I can't say until I actually see it on my calendar, but definitely, that sounds amazing. And I need another reason to go to the Bay Area. I was just there recently
for
like 24 hours, so it wasn't
enough. I remember. No, the Bay's got a lot going on, you know. But yeah, definitely, you know, come out and check us out. It's going to be a fun event.
Definitely. Can you tell everyone one more time where they can find you?
So
they
find
you online.
If you want to hit up HHCF or have me come out to one of your universities or whatever and speak, I have a couple different talks that I do. You can find me at hiphopchess.com. You can also find me on Instagram at @realhiphopchess. It's the same thing on Snapchat, but I'm not really on my Snapchat. And if you really want to see like the impact of what we do, go to our blog, which is hiphopchess.blogspot.com.
Very, very cool. I went there this morning. I was like, wow, this is new. I don't remember seeing this before. So it was really nice. I liked how you can see it in different formats, you know, whether you wanted to look like a magazine or... Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's cool, right? Yeah, no.
Yeah,
it's
it is.
Cool.
I always ask this. I'm almost done. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm not tripping at all.
I'm glad that my audience knows that these are casual conversations, so you're not going to get any real formality in my conversation.
Yeah.
But
yeah. My podcast is the same way.
Yeah, I listen to it. I like that. It makes it... I'm just going to go on a tangent for a minute. Podcasts are awesome because you feel like you're part of the conversation, especially when they're in a very conversational tone. You can do other things and feel as if you're actually hanging with friends. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you could pick three songs that you'd want to be the soundtrack of this podcast, you got to tell me now.
Of this podcast, the soundtrack for this podcast. That's okay. One is going to be the Hurricane song from the Hurricane Carter soundtrack by The Roots, Mos Def, Common, I think, and Talib Kweli and Black Thought. The second soundtrack for this podcast would be The Heavenly Divine Instrumental by Jedi Mind Tricks. And the third soundtrack for this podcast would be I don't know. Now I've hit a wall. Alright. I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna take us in an unusual direction, and I'm gonna say the third song of this podcast will be Nikki Giovanni's album Like a Ripple in a Pond. Yep, the whole album straight through.
I can't do the whole album. One song, no cheating.
One song off that album?
Yeah. Or do you want me to just randomly pick one?
I want Like a Ripple on a Pond to be the song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The pond. Yeah. All right. That's awesome. That's so great. I love it hearing other people's choices. And when I put it together, I'm like, oh, okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the point in the show where you say your name. Like, introduce yourself however you want to and say that you're on the Dope Science Show with Science Steph with Steph. And then you can ad-lib whatever you feel like.
Run that one more time. My head just, like, totally spaced.
Yeah,
so
no worries.
Say...
You're going to say... Yes, you're going to say your name or, you know, and then you're going to say you're on the Dope Science Show with Science Steph with Steph or just on the Dope Science Show, whatever comes out.
Yep.
And
okay.
As long as you get that part right. And then you can ad lib whatever.
All right. Here we go. Mic check, yo. This is Adisa Banjogo, the Bishop of Hip Hop. And you're chilling on the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff from Steph. You know, with Steph. I just totally messed that up. But you know what I'm talking
about. Do it again.
And that's why you listen.
Yeah, I do it again because I interrupted.
All right, nah, that's all good. I got you. All right. You're listening. This is Adisa Banjoso, the Bishop of Hip Hop, and you're listening to the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff with Steph. It's turned into a tongue twister.
I know. You don't have to say Science Stuff with Steph. I think that's hard.
Science Stuff with Steph. All right. Here we go. I'm going to do it again.
Or just
I got it right
science.
Now.
Okay.
Here we go. Yo. Adisa Banjoko, the Bishop of Hip Hop. You're listening to the Dope Science Show with none other than Science Stuff with Steph. Here we go. How was that?
Yeah. That was awesome. That was wonderful.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. And this was a great show.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let me know when it goes up. I'll help share it, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, I'm working on a panel that deals with technology. You should come get on our panel for the weekend thing if you can make it. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Give me the info. I'd love to go on as myself. I don't have any real credentials beyond being myself, so that'll work.
Yeah, that's what the idea is, though. Like, you know, my whole thing is, like, I have the news anchor from NBC 11 Technology doing the panel, right? And, again, this thing is called Unity and Diversity, so I'm trying to have... I got, like, a guy from Yes We Code on. It would be dope to have you on. I'm probably going to get someone from Hack the Hood on. You know what I mean? And just kind of talk.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, cool. Yeah. So we'll keep that cracking. Let me know when it runs. And then I need to get you on my podcast as well. My biggest problem is I'm really uneven when I record. I never really know when I'm going to record. I don't do a good job of that. But on some level, we'll find a way and I'm going to get you on. All right?
Yeah, just let me know. No biggie. Yeah, cool. I'd be honored.
Cool. All right. Well, have a good one.
Well, you have a great... You too, Artie.
All right. Bye.
Well, I hope you guys really enjoyed the show. There's so many, I can tell that the bishop has so many stories that you can spend all night being like, what? No way. Are you serious? A lot of them are in his book. So again, I will say check it out. But if you can meet him in person, get up to the Bay. Go hang out at the Hip Hop Chess Federation. Play some chess. You know, break dance. Talk to people. Meet people. We are so lucky to be able to do that. And I am super lucky that I got invited to be a part of his annual fundraising event, Unity in Diversity, in Trends in Hip-Hop Education, Art, and Technology. This event is a two-day event taking place on the last weekend of February, the 25th and the 26th. It is $10 for both days, so that's super cheap. I'll be up there speaking on Sunday, the 26th, 4 p.m. My panel is Technology, Science, and Hip-Hop, Innovating Beyond the Code. And my co-panelists, I have Milan Drake, Yes We Code, that's where he's from, Andrew Swink, a user engineer from Google, and Sumi Banjoko. She is a coder and founder of the Fashion Cali and is moderated by Scott Budman. He is a NBC News tech anchor. Sounds super cool. I'm really excited and I hope you guys check it out or send a friend that way. I'm also going to be doing a giveaway for the Bishop's book, Bobby Bruce in the Bronx, The Secrets of Hip Hop Chess. Well, I hope you guys enjoy the show, and I will talk to you soon. Peace.
Of truth benefits like ripples on a pond. Let it shine on me. 1 ounce of truth benefits like a ripple on a pond. Let it 1 ounce of truth benefits like ripples on a pond. As things change, remember my smile. The old man said, my time is getting near.
He will surely forsake me.
The old man said, my time is getting near. He looked at his dusty, cracked boots to say, sister, my time is getting near. When I'm gone, remember I smile. And when I'm gone, remember I smile. I'm glad my time is getting there.
I'm glad.
The baby cried.
Man didn't make hot.
Wanted some milk.
He might need me more.
The baby cried, needing some milk. The baby, he cried for wanting. His mother kissed him gently. When I came, they sang a song. When I was born, they sang a song. When I was saved, they sang a song. Remember, I smiled when I'm gone. Remember, I smiled when I'm gone. Sing a good song when I'm gone. We ain't got long to stay. 1 ounce of truth benefits like ripples on a pond. 1 ounce of truth benefits like a ripple on a pond. 1 ounce of truth benefits like ripples on a pond. As things change, remember my smile.